भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So then, 3.5, acquiring knowledge in times of distress. He who possesses faith may receive pure learning even from a man of lower caste, the highest law even from the lowest, and an excellent wife even from a base family. Even from poison, nectar may be taken, even from a child, good advice, even from a foe, a lesson in good conduct, and even from an impure substance, gold. Excellent wives, learning, knowledge of the law, the rules of purity, good advice, and various arts may be acquired from anyone. So that means just that, in other words, at any time, means generally you'd be looking for all these things from very, very good places, you know, very, very elevated, and the teachers and the different things. But these particular items then can be attained anywhere. So here, that's one who possesses faith, because possesses faith and they see the Lord's hand in everything, so they can take things from anywhere. They can see the Lord's hand in whatever's going on. It's just like, one time one devotee was telling me, Sankirtan devotee, he was out distributing books, but he didn't really have any enthusiasm that day. And so he was just kind of doing it. And then he went up to one person, you know, and tried, you know, approached them and all that. And then that person, you know, just a materialist. Then after he, you know, did his whole spiel and all that, I don't think they took a book. They may or may not have taken a book, but they made the comment that if you were more committed to what you were doing, you know, it says, I'm not in, but if you were more committed to what you were doing, you'd probably get a better result. So someone with faith understands Krishna's telling you that. But otherwise, then the tendency would be to finesse that, you know, and just think, you know, who is this guy? I think he is just a carny. He's just that. You know. So that's the point, is that pure learning from you, man of lower caste, or highest law, even from the lowest. Because the lowest, many times, because they're involved in so many sinful activities and like that, for them, they're very aware of the nature of the sinful activities. So they're very aware of the weaknesses of it and how much entangled and bound up you can get. So they many times have great realization on it. Though they may not have enough, you know, purity of heart to give up the activities, they can tell it's bad. So then, therefore, then, you know, highest law even from the lowest, or a lesson in good conduct, you know, like this, you could get some really good, you know, understanding from such people. Child may give good advice, like, just because of their innocence, they don't consider political correctness. So many times they will say things. You know, if they've heard from something good, they have some training, then they'll just speak it. They don't necessarily know this. I think one devotee was telling me that, you know, they used to visit the mother's house, but you know, the mother hadn't changed her habits in any way. And so then, you know, the grandchild was born, and they used to go visit the mother. You know, grandmother's very happy like this. So then they were all in the kitchen. So the mother, the grandmother, the mother and the grandchild were in the kitchen. And they were all there, and, you know, like that. Grandmother was very happy. So then suddenly, they hear this shriek, like a blood-curdling shriek, you know, of the little kid. And then they freaked and went, what's going on? What happened? And the kid had gone to open the fridge, And they asked him, he was just crying and freaking. He said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And the kid said, "Grandma's keeping dead bodies in the refrigerator." You know? And that day, grandmother became a vegetarian. Like that. He never thought of it like that. You know? So they're
what do you call it?
Good advice can be taken from a child. From a foe, lesson in good conduct. You ever see Bhishma or I think it was Ravana, a different Duryodhana. You know, they would give different advices and stuff like that because they know something. They know, so they may even be able to give good advice. You know, but that means you have to. The point is what it's saying here, faith, because there has to be that humility to be able to take it. Point is if it's good, it's taken. If it's not good, then that doesn't matter. But if it's according to Guru Sadhana and Shastra, it doesn't matter where it comes from. Excellent wise is by the training we see that Satyavati, she came from a fisherman's family, that she became the queen, you know, the empress of the world, Shantana's wife. So that's the point is in other words, you're looking for the character. And Vishishta also, his wife was, he had a, I think, Akshamala. I think she was from very low grade family. But being married to him, then she came up to a very elevated political standard. So you get that. That can happen. Right, so excellent wives, learning, knowledge of the law, rules of purity, good advice, and various arts may be acquired from anyone. Like someone who knows the art, they know the art. It doesn't mean that they have good character. You know? But they know the art. So that you get from whoever knows. Nice sticker brahmachari. But if a student desires to pass his whole life in the teacher's house, he must diligently serve him until he is freed from his body. Brahman who serves his teacher until the dissolution of his body reaches forthwith the eternal mansion of Brahman. Right? So that means just by being a brahmachari lifelong, like that, committed, then one is liberated. Like that. It's mentioned that they go to Brahma locally. The nice sticker brahmachari. If he just maintains his full life, then automatically he goes to Brahma Loka. Like that, just for that. Now if he has more understanding of philosophy than that, then he'll get liberated more than that. Then, you know. In any case, they're basically out. Like the Prabhupada says, that brahmacharis are automatically 50% back to Godhead. They just start from that point. Because that's the whole thing that binds us in the material world. It is the desire for sense gratification. And because of that, then you get stuck in. So if that's been given up, then basically you're out of the material world. Okay. So then that's the principles to learn there then is that the proper knowledge can be gained anywhere. It means you always look for good sources, but if you have faith, wherever you see it, it can be taken. You know? That's the point. If it's good, it's taken. Like that. Nice speak of brahmacharya. That doesn't mean that you have a good source and you go somewhere else. It's not talking about that. It's just talking either offhand knowledge or some specific knowledge you need to get. And the person who has that knowledge is not necessarily the best character to have the knowledge. Then you can take it from that. Because in all these things, then it always tells what's the normal law and then what they do in times of distress. So then this is the a nice sticka brahmacharya, just the principle of brahmacharya is so fundamental for the Vedic culture. The whole thing is based on that. Because therefore at the beginning there must be brahmacharya, at the end there must be brahmacharya. Like that. And if it's practiced properly, then in the middle there's also. So Grihastha also, if he follows the principles, then he's also brahmacharya. So that's the whole thing is based on that. Control of the senses, we always see that's always one of the main points. Any verse is giving a list of qualities, control of the senses is always one of them. Non-violence, control of the senses. These are always there. Knowledge, transcendental knowledge. Like that. You're non-violent, you have transcendental knowledge. Control the senses. Because the thing is control of the senses and non-violence and the knowledge. These are basically the reverse of what brought us here. Because of lack of knowledge, we accept ourselves as the Lord. Right? So that means our sambandha is off. So if that knowledge is proper, that corrects that. Also for non-violent means envy, then and violence. Envy, violence, fear, those are all connected to the same thing. It's all also a misunderstanding in Sambandha. So if that's corrected, then from, in other words, the application in the life is corrected. In other words, the philosophy is the position, and the non-violence is the application. Right? Just like in Ishopanishad, it mentions that the Mayavadis, they're violent to the soul. Right? So they're the worst. Right? Because, Atmahatma. That they kill the soul. Like that. So that's the worst violence. So it's very broad, this non-violent. It doesn't just mean that you're nice to everybody. Or you don't kill, you don't hurt anybody. But that also means in dealings with people, you're not rough and harsh and hurt people. It also means that you deal in the philosophy, you practice the philosophy of the culture, you give it to others. You know, you don't misdirect anyone philosophically. So that takes care of that whole thing of us wanting to be God. And then control of the senses is, I want to be the enjoyer. So, because those are the two things that keep us in the material world. Is that envy and attachment. So if those can be addressed, then it's fine. So this is then showing that the brahmacharya is the basis of the... If the senses are controlled, then there's no need to be the controller. To control the senses, you have to understand you're not the controller, because brahmacharya has to be humble. So that's the beginning of the whole culture. The whole culture is based on humility. If humility is there, then you have tolerance, then you have respect. Then the whole culture will expand from that. And if not, then we don't have. Any questions on this side? Okay, discourse 3. The Grihastha Ashram, Topic 5, The Rule of Bathing, Graduation. A student who has studied in due order the three Vedas, or two or even one only, without breaking the rules of studentship, shall enter the order of householders. Like that. So then the principle in this topic is this point, a first-class brahmacharya makes a first-class grihastha. That's the principle of it. Is that someone who's properly studied and been trained, then they can become grihastha. The idea is just somebody doesn't get trained and then just whenever they get lusty they get married, then that's not the greatest platform. You know, of course that person should be married, but they won't be a first class grihastha. First class grihastha means they're trained. So that was always Prabhupada's idea. So everyone comes to the temple, then everyone, men, women, they all get trained in celibacy. You know, celibacy, chastity, this kind of thing. Then, after that, they get married, then they'll be good. Like that. Even if before that, they have no background in it, but they get some training, and it's always good. So that's the idea. Then topic 6, the law of marriage. Having bathed with the permission of his teacher, bathed here meaning refers to the graduation ceremony. Because in the ceremony, there's a part of the ritual is where they sprinkle the graduate with water. So that's considered being bathed. So that's one of the ways of referring to it, because the someone who has graduated is called a snataka. A snataka means one who has been bathed, like that. There's one who has graduated. You only graduate if you finish your studies. Like that. And then when you finish, as we're saying, you studied either 3 or 2 or 1 Veda. You know, in other words, they've nicely studied the philosophy.
Okay. Having bathed the permission of the teacher and performed according to the rule of the Sambartana, the rite on returning home, twice born man shall marry a wife of equal nature who is endowed with auspiciousness.
Okay, so this is the principle, this is the essence of the marriage, is marry a wife of equal nature. That is the main principle. Is that the man and the woman must be of equal nature. If that's equal, then it will work nicely. If it's not equal nature, then it won't work. You know, equal means that basically you're looking at the mentality.
the culture, the mentality, the value system, all that. If that's equal, then it will go smoothly. Because if it's different, then naturally there's going to be a difference of opinion that will always be there. So the Vedic culture was, is you get the match as close as possible so you don't have this difference of opinion. So that's it. Because already as it is, it's a difficult thing to make work. So you want to start as close with the greatest, advantage. Yeah. So equal nature gives the advantage. Like that. But if that's not, that's why Gandharva marriage is not considered a very good marriage, because it's simply based on mutual attraction. So who knows what causes a mutual attraction? It can be anything. So then that is not enough, because it's good enough to engage in sense enjoyment, but it's not good enough to live together necessarily. So you would see that the Kshatriyas could use it in previous ages. Even in Kali Yuga, they're not allowed to use it. But in the other three Yugas, they could use it because the Kshatriya is well trained. They went to the Gurukul, they were trained, they had standards. And the girl, the princess, was also the same. So then if a Kshatriya boy and a Kshatriya girl got attracted to each other, they still had the same cultural background. Because the nobility all had the same, training. So there wouldn't be any problem. Because they're in the mode of passion and all this, so it's not much of a difficulty for them. Brahmins wouldn't use it. They could if they wanted, but they generally wouldn't use it. But because then they would never want to base a relationship on passion, because of their nature, their occupation is goodness. So it would be a distraction. Like that. Yeah, pratiloma analoma. That's why the equal nature should be there. Because the analoma is not so bad, because it's with the grain. It's moving with the grain. So it's not good, but it's not so bad. If it's only 1 degree difference, then they're not considered a different species. But if it's 2 or more degrees difference, then they're actually a different species of life than the mother or the father. They're a third species. But if the father and the mother are only 1 degree difference on the loma, then the child will have the nature of the mother. The son will take the nature of the mother. So it just drops at 1. But if it's 2, they're actually a different species of life. And if it's pratiloma, even if it's 1 degree difference, it's a different species of life. Like that. Anuloma means Brahman, Kshatriya, Brahman, Vaishya, Brahman, Shudra, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Shudra, Vaishya, Shudra. Those are all Anulomas. So there's 6 Anuloma, 6 Pratiloma. Of it, Kshatriya, it means 1 degree, so a Brahman and a Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Vaishya, Shudra, those are considered okay. They're called Anantaras. So they're not another species of life, just like that. So then it's okay. But if it's 2 degrees, Brahman and a Vaishya, Brahman and a Shudra, like Brahman and a Shudra, that's a Nishada. Yeah. Like that. Or Kshatriya and a Shudra, that's an Ugra. They're inclined towards fighting. They'll be like foot soldiers, guards, things like that, and they're very violent and nasty. Because they're Kshatriyas with a Shudra mentality. So that's why they're called Ugras. Like that. So that's a problem. But you reverse it, then it's always bad. Even if it's 1 degree, it's not considered good. So that's why it's always to find equalness of nature. It doesn't matter what it is. Just like you have 2 Nishadas, a Nishada should marry a Nishada. They shouldn't marry lower. Otherwise the child keeps going lower, 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 lower. So if a Nishada marries a Nishada, then you get a Nishada. That's why then they would stay together. The Nishadas would stay together. The Chandalas stay together. The Sopachas stay together. Like this. Because they're already mixes. And if they stay together, then it doesn't get any worse. And then they'll have their own community traditions and stuff like that. So it'll create, regulation and upliftment. But if they don't, then it's not. So that's why equalness of nature is so important. Because then the community stays balanced. of all of it, then naturally the most important is that Krishna consciousness, that drive, that kind of thing. But along with that, it's always good to check the conditions. Nature is similar. You know, because when you're dealing in marriage, sometimes Krishna consciousness doesn't always prevail. It's the prominent element. You know, like that. It has a tendency to sometimes fall out of that. You know. Yeah. So therefore, then if both are good, then it'll always work. If not, if it's just the Krishna consciousness is good, if it slips out of that, it may not work nicely. You know? And if the material side is good, then if Krishna consciousness is good or not, then it still may work. Like that. Because it's like, if they weren't devotees, they would still be able to live together. So if they're devotees, that makes it even easier. You know?
When a community keeps on marrying their members within the same category of population, isn't there a risk that, let's say, a few generations down the line, because of you using the same law, all the time?
Well, that's why you always have to see that they're different gotra.
Yeah.
Nature means similar nature. If they both have brahminical nature, they both have kshatriya, they both have vaishya, that's what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But they need to be from different families.
Yeah.
Like that. They need to be from different families. Like that. So that that is always, it means there's not a common, generally the ideal is there's no common relative within seven generations.
Yeah.
If there is a seventh generation, there's no problem. But there are some exceptions when it's on the mother's side of the family. Because there the gotra is different. Ideally is the gotra and the you don't have common relatives, sapinda. It's not sapinda sagotra. But it seems of the two the sagotra is the main. And sapinda is sometimes looked at, because the thing is the women are always coming in from the outside. You know, so the mother is already a different family. You know. So even though they're related, they're sagotra, they're actually a different bloodline. Yeah. So that's, you know what I'm saying? So it doesn't seem to be as strict on that, though it's always good to consider that.
Topic 7, the marriage rites, the 8 rites. Listen. Okay, yeah. So the essence of that is equal nature. Right. Topic 5, then the essence is that they should be properly trained as a brahmachari, then they'll be good vihasas. And topic 6 is then they should marry a wife of equal nature, like that. Then things will be successful. And topic 7 is the marriage rites themselves. Now listen to the brief description of the following 8 marriage rites used by the 4 varnas, which partially secure benefits and partially produce evil, both in this life and after death. They are the rite of Brahma, that of the gods, Daiva, that of the rishis, Arsha, that of Prajapati, Prajapatya, that of the Asuras, Asura, that of the Gandharvas, Gandharva, that of Rakshasas, Rakshasa, and that of the Paisachas. Okay, then the commentary. See, the Brahma rite is the gift of a daughter to a man learned in the Veda. The Daiva rite, a gift of a daughter to a priest who officiates at a sacrifice. It means the father is having a sacrifice, and he gives his daughter to the priest, the officiating priest. The Arsha rite, the gift of a daughter at the bridegroom's request. Prajapatya, the gift of a daughter by the girl's own arrangements. Yasura rite, when a maiden is received after giving much wealth. Gandharva rite, the voluntary union of a maiden with her lover. Rakshasa rite, the forcible abduction of a maiden from her home. Paisach rite, when a man by stealth seduces a girl. So we see the first 4 have in common that it's a gift. The father approves of it and gives the daughter away. That's the common thing. Therefore, the first 4 are considered good. And the last 4, we see that's not the case. First one is she's bought. The other is voluntary. The other is forcible abduction. It means she's conscious of it. And the last one is she's not really conscious of it. Like that. So those are all considered bad. And of those, then Manu forbids the Asura and the Paisach rites. Means selling the daughter and seducing her, those are considered just not usable.
And then the other two, Gandharva and Rakshasa, then generally that's only for Kshatriyas. And Prabhupada makes a comment, in Kali Yuga even Kshatriyas can't use them. So that leaves in the Kali Yuga the first four rites. Like that, where it's either the father's arrangement by endeavor, or the second is father's arrangement by chance, you know, just the priest he happens to be impressed with. The third is the boy approaches the girl's family. The fourth is the girl approaches the boy's family. It's not the father's arrangement, it's the daughter's arrangement. First two are father's arrangement, second is the boy's arrangement, third is the girl's arrangement. Right, so the gift of daughters amongst Brahmins is most approved. So that's what's considered the best. And because Vaishnavas follow the Brahminical culture, then therefore the Brahma is always considered the best. In any case, if you say gift of daughters amongst Brahmins, that means the first four rites, or it can specifically mean the Brahma rite. So in any case, yeah. So in other words, the marriage rite that's the father with the father's approval, you know, like that, then is always considered the best. Because then you have the whole support of the family and everything like that. Otherwise, then you don't, and it's not so good. Because marriage means you're actually connecting two families. That's the thing. You get the whole package with it. You know, that's the thing of the Gandharva rite. Gandharva rite is only considering the boy and the girl. But in actuality, you know, it's the whole package, the whole family goes with it. You know, some cultures it's more, you know, and some cultures it may be less. But in any case, that's why it's the gift of the daughter is considered the best.
Okay. Then this is all part of the marriage rites. Okay, Grihastha Brahmachari. That the husband approaches wife in due season, being constantly satisfied with her alone. He, being intent on pleasing her, may approach her with a desire for conjugal union on any day except the parvanas. But among these, the first four, the 11th and 13th, are declared to be forbidden. The remaining nights are recommended. He who avoids women on the 6 forbidden nights and on 8 others is equal in chastity to a student in whichever order he may live. Yeah. So then the in other words, this principle is then even in Grihastha Ashram, Brahmacharya is still there. So there must be regulation. So then the consideration is that there are approved nights. And so those can be used, others cannot be used. So if he only uses those, you know, things are planned, then he's as good as a brahmachari. Because then you take the passion out of it. Something's planned, it loses its passion. You know? If it's spontaneous, then passion is the cause of it. If it's planned, it means goodness is the cause. And so then that establishes them as brahmachari. So that's the honor of women. Women must be honored and adorned by their fathers, brothers, husbands, and brothers-in-law who desire their own welfare. In that family where the husband is pleased with his wife and the wife with her husband, happiness will assuredly be lasting. The wife is radiant with beauty, the whole house is bright. But if she is destitute of beauty, all will appear dismal. By low marriages, by omitting the performance of sacred rites, by neglecting the study of the Veda, and by irreverence towards Brahmanas, great families sink low. The families that are rich in the knowledge of the Veda, though possessing little wealth, are numbered among the great and acquire great fame.
So then if they have the culture and all that, then the family stays good. And we see it's so important is that the women must be taken care of. If they're taken care of, then the whole house is happy. If they're not taken care of, then the whole house becomes unhappy. So that's the principle that it must be done. And then
the family can be degraded then by these points. Means if they're low marriages, means that they're mixed marriages, they're not actually of equal nature. Omitting to perform sacred rites means they don't perform sacrifice, you know, like that. Whatever's the sacrifice for the age. Neglecting to study the Veda, so they're not knowledgeable in the Shastra, they're just materialistic. And by irreverence towards Brahmins, if they don't have respect for the Brahmins, don't give them charity to Brahmins, then that family would be degraded. And so then it makes a point is that those who will have knowledge, and actually if you have knowledge, then you're not going to have low marriages, you're not going to give up the sacred rites, and you have the knowledge because of your respect for Brahmins. So they're considered great families, even though they're not wealthy. While these other families, even though they're wealthy, they're not considered great. Does that make sense? So the principle then is that if the women are respected and taken care of, then household life will go peacefully. Okay? That's one point. And the other is that by having knowledge and practicing that knowledge, then that is considered a dignified family. And if that doesn't have, then they're not considered very special.
Does that make any sense? Any questions on this? Okay, topic 8. The 5 great sacrifices. Okay. With the sacred fire kindled at the wedding, a household shall perform, according to the law, the domestic ceremonies and the 5 great sacrifices. And with that he shall daily cook his food. Right? So sometimes devotees are saying that things are, you know, too many rules and all that. Prabhupada's just given the essence. It's supposed to be that the fire that was kindled for the wedding, that fire is kept by the Brahmin in his house. With that he performs his daily sacrifice, and with that he cooks his meals. Like that. So that means you have to maintain that fire. That means you have to have a fixed residence. That means you have to be daily doing yajna. Otherwise the fire won't maintain. As you open the fire, you put more wood in that, you build it up, you do the yajna, it makes more coals, and you close it again with ash. And then it will last till the evening. Then in the evening you do your other yajna. So that way, 2 times a day yajna, you maintain the fire. And then that fire is taken out and used for the cooking. So you do your early morning yajna, then some of that fire will be taken to the kitchen, and then from there, then you have you cook your meal. So that's just that, and the 5 great sacrifices are performed. So we will see here in the purports, and then as devotees, then because we're worshiping Krishna, then those come out. They call these 5 sacrifices also Ahuta, Huta, Prahuta, Brahmanyahuta, and Prasita. A huta, not offered in the fire, is the muttering of Vedic texts. Huta, the burnt oblation offered to the gods. Prahuta, offered by scattering it on the ground, the Bali offering given to the Buddhas. Right? So prahuta is when they give food for all living entities. Brahmanyahuta, offered in the digestive fire of Brahmins, means feeding the Brahmins. The respectful reception of Brahmin guests. And prasita, eaten, the daily oblation to the mains called tarpana. So in other words, there's a debt to the sages, the demigods, the general living entities, the Brahmins, and to the forefathers. Those are the 5 great sacrifices. Bhagavad Gita 1.4 performed. According to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, there's a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu, because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful reactions. Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various kinds of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in subtle bodies as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasad food are offered to the forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life.
Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in a devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. It is stated in the Bhagavatam 11.5.41. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, so in other words, someone who's given up food and activities and is very serious on the devotional path, he has not none of these to perform. So that's why if one is not serious on the path and is materialistically inclined, technically you do have to, you know, you want fruit of result, but that fruit of result is coming because the sages, the demigods, the ghosts and other living entities, because of the Brahmins, humankind, like this, and the forefathers. That's how you're getting it. You don't get material fruits without them, right? Because the demigods are the medium to give it. We know about it from the sages. We learn from the teachers, the Brahmins, and other humans in society were benefited by it. You know, the general living entities means everything goes on because so many living entities. It's not just ourselves. It's not just humans. It's others. You know, they take care of so many things. And we only are born in a particular family. We get the benefits of that because of the forefathers. So it was materialistic, that's there. So that's why you take up devotional service, is situated in that, then you don't have to, because you're going to Krishna. He's the source of everybody. Right? So then, worshipping him means worshipping the devotees. Like that, the spiritual master, the previous acharyas. Like that. So then, it's all taken care of.
In the ninth chapter of
this That means there, because see, there's many ways that these are interpreted. There's a few ways of here. So when you're talking about other living entities, it also includes feeding your family and others who you are dependent upon you, like that. But besides that, then you have also the ritual has there. In other words, there's two things that are there: is you're feeding yourself, and you're feeding your family. But there's rituals that go with that. It means the ritual is tarpana. You're offering the forefathers, but in feeding of food, you feed yourself. Because if you're not fed, you can't do the tarpana for the forefathers. Like that. Like that. So these different elements come up. Like that. An oblation duly thrown into the fire reaches the sun. From the sun comes rain. From rain, food. From there, the living entities derive their subsistence. That's why it says on the Karmakanda, you know, on the cycle of fruitive activities, the Grihastha ashram is the best. Because they're the ones doing sacrifice, and because of that, then all living entities in the universe are maintained. The demigods are maintained, and all other living entities that they provide for. So it's because of the Grihastha. So they actually maintain everybody. They're giving charity to the other three orders. So they're considered the best. If you're getting out of here, then at one point that has to be given up, and then you just get out of here. Even that attachment to being, you know, taking care of the friend of all living entities. That's why it's ultimately Krishna is the friend. Therefore the Surya Vamsa is the friend. Because otherwise you get attached to that whole thing. You know, even in the gross. Okay, I'm not the Lord, I'm not the enjoyer, but I'm doing wealth, good for everybody. You know, when I'm doing my yajnas, everyone's taken care of, I give my charity, I'm helpful. But even that, no, even Krishna is. So ultimately, the whole thing has to be given up. So, in the social structure and all that, Grihastha is considered the best. But as far as getting out of the material world, then
it is a stepping stone to get to the ones above that, which then are a stepping stone to get you out of the material world. So because the two above it are considered more close to getting out, therefore they're respected by the grihasthas as seen to them. But as far as maintenance of everybody, it's the grihasthas that maintain it. That makes sense. In other words, the two things are happening at once. If you're talking about dharma, artha, kama, the grihastha is more important. If you're talking about moksha, then the sannyas, brahmacharya, vanaprastha, sannyas is more important. But the human being needs all four. But, you know, like that. But that only has value, those four, if it is based on the fifth one, which is Krishna consciousness. If that's there, then whichever order you're situated in, then it works fine for Krishna. No.
Nope. We can say in the past, maybe to Mara, even in Mara's brother, she has to cope with this understanding that anger can kill the
Buddha.
Even if you have a Mara not to.
Because he's seeing the deer and he knows the deer is in that mentality. So out of compassion for a conditioned soul who thinks he's a deer, therefore he has to be dealt with as one, he's taken care of. So it's actually even in a higher level than that. But even that's not good enough. Even that will get keepy. So that's why at some point all of that kind of connection has to be given up. Therefore it's Krishna is the one who's the most, who is the friend, who's the kind. Krishna will take care. I think it was Ramanujacharya. I think I heard the story. Ramanujacharya, he was going to leave home and his wife was just going to give birth to a child. I think it was Ramanujacharya, maybe it was someone else. So then he thought he'd just wait to just see the child being born, you know, to find out. You know, just in curiosity, was it a boy or girl, you know, what this and that. In the process of childbirth, the mother died. The child was okay, but the mother died. Then he thought, oh, this is a big mistake, because you know, he was planning to leave, and now he's got to take care of this kid. So he's lamenting like this. He saw at that time a tick-ticky egg drop, and then, you know, the tick-ticky broke out of the baby tick-ticky, and as soon as he broke out, then a fly came by and he caught the fly and ate it. Or some bug came by and ate it. And then he understood, no, God's taking care of everyone. So then he went. Was it Madhva?
Last time you when you mentioned it, you said
Madhva. Okay. I don't remember because I haven't heard the story like 20 years. No, it means they're all. It means the point is just when one perfects oneself, then when all those are benefited. Like that. Because the point is devotional service is so perfect. So that by taking up devotional service, it benefits everybody. Because you're serving Krishna, then automatically Krishna takes care of all these forefathers. Even as just said, just the qualified son who performs his duties according to the marriage rite, he himself will liberate so many generations. Like that. You know, and that's just for being, you know, how you say it? The parents were married and the child conceived according to the proper standards. Like that. Because the mentality, the Brahma rite that is the best, so that's frees, I think, 21 generations. It means 10 in the past, 10 in the future, and themselves. The Daiva rite, I think it's 15. 7, 7, and 1. Then the Prajapatya is 6, 6, and 1. So it's 13. And I think the Arsha, then it's 3, 3, and 1, so 7. Any other questions on that? I'm just thinking we shouldn't go too far over this week. Looks like it's been storming and it's still getting light and I can get back before anything gets too weird.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.